פה לא חידוש. בסדר, אוקיי. We left off on דף רמד וו עמד אלף. By Esrog Habosar. Esrog Habosar, Rabbi Akiva, Posel Chachamim Machshirim. Which of the Rishonim on the page give us an indication of exactly what Bosar means? Rashi, to a certain degree, correct. I mean, explaining Rabbi Akiva Shita, but which Rishon sends us to a Pasuk? So if you look in Rabbeinu Chananel, which of course I didn't send you to, you look in Rabbeinu Chananel, Esrog HaBosar, Avos Achlu Bosar. So I simply quoted to you on the page there in front of you, two psukim that have the same phrase, one from Sefer Yirmiyahu and one from Sefer Yecheskel, that Rabbeinu Chananel felt that if we look at these psukim from the context, we would understand what Bosar is. Right? So you have the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Bayamim Ahem, that there will come a time, unfortunately, come post Korban, Lo Yomru Od Avos Achlu Bosar V'Shinei Banim Tikena. Similarly, Yecheskel points out, Malachem Atem Moshe Metamashal Hazeh. Why you keep using this example? Alad Mas Yisrael Emor Avos Achlu Bosar V'Shinei Habanim Tikena. What exactly is going on over here? What does it appear from the pasuk is the nature of this? Of this stage, both are in the fruit.
Sounds better.
Bitter?
It's like this is a bad, this is a nebuah of criticizing by Israel.
Correct.
It's like a bad thing.
Right. In other words, that B'nai Israel said, they used a mashal that if a parent were to eat bosar, then the children's teeth would be set on edge. That when you eat something which is very chamutz, something which is very sour, then it puts, you know, then you sort of feel the sour balls or whatever, the candies, I can't understand how kids eat them, but you know, it's the for an adult at least, you know, it's they put your whole mouth in a turmoil, in a frenzy. And so the mashal was that look, there are so many generations of our forefathers who have sinned from the time of Yeravam ben Nevat in Aseres Hashvatim, you have Menashe in Yehuda, and nothing happened to them. So what kind of Akash Baruch Hu's cheshbon is that the fathers are going to sin, they're going to be sour, but the children who are going to suffer the punishment. And since we're sinning, so it's our children are going to suffer the punishment, not us. In other words, that they had a very very weird view of Hashgacha Pratis, that it appears that Akash Baruch Hu is not dealing with the sinners. It's only going to deal, all these nevuos probably will take place, but not in the time of the sinners, but in the time of their children. And so we have nothing to worry about. So Yirmiyahu and Yecheskel say, you're up the creek, you know, namely that you don't realize that Akash Baruch Hu works in a different manner. So Rashi points out, Avos Achlu Bosar pri ad shelo nitbashel. In other words, the fruit before it is ripe, before it is really edible, v'shinei habanim tikena, kach darko shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ha'avostim v'habanos lukim, harei mashinim chatu malchei Yisrael kodem shegalu, v'af anu lo nid'ag lokot v'avoneinu. Now it's that we have nothing to worry about because we're the sinners, we're the fathers, that the punishment will come on a later generation, not on us. In any case, what is clear over here from that what is the concept of Bosar? It's not ripe, it's still in a stage of being inedible. Sometimes you go to, at the beginning of a season of a fruit, you go to the marketplace and they'll have tangerines, etc. You want to buy them for Shechiyon or Rosh Hashanah, and they're just still very very sour. That's the yes.
But Esrogim are always really sour.
Now, Esrogim nowadays are always really, really sour. This is still part of Ikvas of the Meshicha, that we have to wait for it to get back to the way it was in the time of the Chumash and the time of Chazal. In other words, fruits also change in terms. In other words, over here we're speaking about not. In other words, if you have a lemon which is fully ripe, clearly it's going to have a lemon taste. But if you have a lemon which is not ripe, it's going to have a taste which is which we would consider to be inedible, not a taste that we would add to our tea or that we would add to lime and make Sprite. It would be one level down. So over here, so we have Rabbi Akiva saying that an esrog, we have a machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, what is the status of this esrog bosar? Then the Gemara points out, Amar Rabba, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shimon, Amru Davar Echad, Rabbi Akiva Hada Amran, Rabbi Shimon Maihi. So the Gemara quotes a Mishnah in Maisros, Rabbi Shimon Poter as Hesrogim Bekotanon. Okay, so let's try and understand what is going on over here. Let's go back for 1 minute to Rabbi Akiva, within Rashi. Why is there an issue with Esrog Bosar? It's not ripe, and therefore it's not what?
It's not a pri.
It's not a pri, right? This is what we saw in the Perush Mishnayos of the Rambam, the pri Eitz Hadar. The Rambam said that when we had Truma Temeya, when we had Orla, and the Gemara said that it's possible because it's Eino Ro'i La'achila, so we were searching for, how do you know that you require Ro'i La'achila? So Rashi, as you recall, worked on the side of Kol Hano'a Shelo, that, in other words, you're missing this Hano'a of Achila. The Rambam simply says, if it's not Ro'i La'achila, it's not a pri. And the Torah says, pri eitz da. So according to Rabbi Akiva, in other words, we don't have over here the pri. What will Chachamim hold, we'll see in a moment. But the Gemara moves over to Rabbi Shimon. And so I just pointed out to you on the page, if you look in the Mishnayos in Maisros, so the first Mishnah gives a rule which pulls us through the first four Mishnayos. Kal amru b'maisros. Kol shehu ochel v'nishmar v'gidulav min ha'aretz chayev b'masot. That there are conditions under which one would be chayev in maaser, and one of the conditions is kol shehu ochel. It has to be edible, and therefore the Mishnah ends up kol she'ein tchiloso ochel avol sofo ochel eino chayev ad she'iyosa ochel. That we're not talking over here whether the species is edible. Even if the species is edible, the particular fruit has to be edible. And so if a fruit begins being inedible and slowly turns into edible, only when it's edible is it going to be chayev and meiser. Okay. And then the Mishnah gives us a whole list in Mishnayos Beis and Gimel and Dalet. Me'emas ayaperos chayavos b'meiser. When looking at the fruit from externally, how would we know whether it is roi l'achila? And every fruit has its own external indications. And then, just we'll come back to the esrog in a minute. In Mishnah Hay, there's also a second condition for maiser. If the first condition is what we call onas ma'asros, the time period in which the fruit is ripe enough to be roi l'achila, to be chayv in maaser, the second criteria, Mishnah Hay, Ezehu Gornon Lemasos, is also a din of Gmar Malacha, that between the time that the fruit is ripe and the time of the Gmar Malacha of the fruit, one would be allowed to eat that fruit, Bachila Sarai, even without Hafrashas Trumas Maasros. Once we reach the Goren, once it reaches its Gmar Malacha, then even for an Achila Sarai, one has to be Mafrash Trumas Maasros. Okay, that's the framework that we have in the Mishnayos. Within that framework, in Mishnah Dalet, we deal with Esrogim. That the Tanakama of the Mishnah, if you want to call them Chachamim, they hold that Tapuchim ve'esrogim, Chayavim, Gedolim, Uketanim. That the size is irrelevant, Kanir'eh, that from the very beginning, it's already Roi la'achila. Ma'ashenkin Rabbi Shimon, Poter es Esrogim bekotnan. I shouldn't use the word size, I should use the word age. According to Rabbi Shimon, the young esrogim, the ones that have just begun to grow, those are potter from maaser. So again, we have what appears to be a machlokas as to at what point esrogim become ro'oi le'achila, and this would impact on our understanding of Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim by us. How would you understand such a machlokas between the Chachamim Rabbi Shimon, whether you're chayevim begodlam or bekatnam, or you're patur bekatnam? what appears to be, according on the surface, what kind of a machlokas?
It sounds like a
machlokas mitzius, which Brisker Torah finds to be an anathema. You can't speak about a machlokas mitzius. Everyone knew what the mitzius was. So then what in other words, how can one reinterpret the machlokas to be mitzius, not to be machlokas mitzius? You know, that's one way of doing it, but you know, it's turning it into a concept as opposed to a metzius. But even within the world of metzius, where could the machlokas be? That everyone agrees that the esro katan has a degree of sourness to it. That everyone agrees that the esro katan is not as edible as the esro gadol. But what's the question?
Is that good enough or not enough?
Right. Exactly. Where do you draw the line? In other words, that everyone agrees that maestros require kol shu ochel. Everyone requires an ochel. The question is, what is the standard of ochel? That there's always going to be a sliding scale. Where upon that sliding scale do you set your standard? And that's the machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim. So within the standard of the Chachamim, the esrog is in its in its less ripe state, still already roi l'achila, while according to the standard of Rabbi Shimon, it's not. So the Gemara over here puts one and one together and gets two. That we have over here a confluence of two shitos. That's what Rabbah says. Amar Rabbah, right? Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shimon, Amru Davar Echad. That they both hold that the Esrog Bosar is not roi l'achila. With which nafkaminas?
And
dalad minim. In other words, in dalad minim you need pri, and this is not a pri. That in maaser we need ochel, and this is not an ochel. That's the, in other words, that's the working assumption of Rabbi Amar Abaye. Abaye claims that there's room to distinguish. Dilma lohi ad kan lo kamar Rabbi Akiva hacha de beinan hadar v'leka. Maybe there's another factor. In terms of roi l'achila, Rabbi Akiva would paskin like the Chachamim, that an esro katan is the standard of being roi l'achila. But what do we require in the world of dalad minim on top of roi l'achila? The world of hadar. And that's what's missing in the esrog voser, Masha ein kein. In maestros, we don't need hadar, all we need is roi l'achila. And so we can break the connection between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Akiva. There's a new factor in the world of Hadar. Inami, or the other way around. Ad kan lo kam Rabbi Shimon Hasam, elo dichsiv, aser taaser kol tevuat zaracha, kederach shebnei adam motziim lizriya. Aval hacha karabonan sviralei. That maybe in the world of roi la'achila, Rabbi Shimon would agree that the esrog, even bekatnos, is roi la'achila, but there's another condition in the world of maestros that we haven't brought up to this point. And what is that? What is kederach shvenei adam motziim lizriya? That's that whole long Rashi.
Rashi's
pri hasi litzmoach. Correct. In other words, that what pri can be used as a seed? What pri can be used in order to be able to grow other peros? That we require not just tfuah, but tfuat zaracha, a tfuah that can serve to create the next. The cloning of tfuah, the next generation of tfuah, and that's what's missing in the esrog bikatnusa. Okay, that there's room to distinguish. So we have then within Rabbi Akiva two understandings of why esrog boser is possible. Either esrog is boser is possible because it's not roi l'achila, or it's possible because it's not a pri, right? Or it's possible because of hadar. What difference does it make? I mean, leaving aside the connection to Rabbi Shimon, what difference does it make as to what is the source of the psul of esrog bosar?
First day.
Excellent, right. In other words, how many days is it pasul? Hadar is a din, we pointed out. It's machlokas rishonim. But many rishonim hold that hadar is only the first day. That's the pashtus of the sugya at the beginning of the perek, right? That hadar is the first day, and then we have to come on to mitzvah b'avera, excuse me, mechtashuri, etc. for the later days. Mashenken, if it's not a pri, then it's simply not a pri. There's nothing to talk about. And it would be puzzle for the entire week. So that's what we have over here. Pashtus of the Gemara Aliba de Rashi and Ben Ochanano. Tosfos has a girsa in Rashi that we do not have in our Rashi. Tosfos quoted this girsa already. And Daf Lamed Aleph in the days, Pirish Bekuntris, Katan Kapul Halava, namely not dealing with Bosar in terms of ripeness, but dealing with Bosar in terms of what factor?
Size.
Veloyi, thank you, precious Bresh Pirkin, Ahi Shir Esrok de Mastina Nasa. Tosfos points out that there's a double whammy with that girsa in Rashi. A, our sugi is not talking about size. That's a sugi and Allah from a base. There are two different sugios dealing with esrogim as they begin to grow. We have an issue of ripeness. That's our sugya. We have an issue of size. That's a sugi and Allah from a base. And secondly, even were we to be dealing with the world of size, pul halavan relates to what fruit?
Grapes.
Grapes. Nothing to do with esrogim. Namely, it's simply not the standard of an esrog. Yes?
I understand. Rashi said esrog.
Esrog Bosar, I'm sorry. Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. My mistake. I was looking in our sugya on Rashi. You're 100% correct, right? I'm sorry. It's my mistake. It is a girsa in Rashi. So Tosfos points out that this girsa in Rashi, which is brought in the list of the Braisa, in other words, before the Braisa. Before the Amar Mar, before the Braisa, before the Gemara dissects the Braisa into sections, in that list, Rashi explains it as Katan Kapul Halavan, and what Tosfos points out is that this can lead to a tremendous misunderstanding. That Lachora, there you're dealing with the world of size, and our Sugya says that the world of Bosar. It's not a world of size, but a world of ripeness. You're correct. I'm sorry. Thank you very much for the correction. Moving back to Daf Lamed Aleph from the days, what is the terminology that is used over there in the Gemara to deal with the minimum size of the esrog? Those are the shiurim. We have machlokas. What is the minimum size, keegos or kebetza? But what is the requirement based on? What in other words, why should one require a minimal size? The havamin of the Gemara was hadar, and that would be a proof that even Rav Yehuda holds that arba minim, at least an esrog, requires the condition of hadar. And Gemara rejects that because Rabbi Yehuda holds that there's no din of Hadar, but rather it's a din of what?
Gemar Pri.
So already we pointed out that there's room to distinguish between the two sugyos. This is what Tosfos pointed out in Shir Esro Katan, that the Gemar Pri is not the same as Gemar Bishul. That our Gemara is talking about the maturity of the fruit, the ripeness of the fruit, that's called Gemar Bishulo. Mashenken, the Gemara and Daf Lamed Aleph and Beis deals with Gemar Pri. But what exactly is Gemar Pri? In other words, what other criteria is there aside from the world of the ripening of the fruit? What other criteria could come in? So if you recall at that time when we were in the Sugi, we pointed out that the Gemar Pri is used as the source not only of the size of the estrog, the minimum size, but also of the color. Right, and we had the whole Tosfos as to whether it's possible to have a change in color that lemafreya would be machshir and esrog, namely that if the esrog turns from green to yellow, Chanukah time, then we'll say lemafreya, kind of this was a proper esrog, even on Sukkot. That's the whole machlokes. Tosfos felt lemafreya would work. We saw the Bach and other achronim were very upset with Tosfos because lechora. If Gemar Pri would mean ripening, so what if it ripens on Chanukah? It wasn't ripe on Sukkot. Why should you view Mafreya? So how did the Rav understand the phrase of Gemar Bishulo over there on Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis? Do you recall? Not Gemar Bishulo, Gemar Peira, that would apply both to the color and to the size, and this would give us an ability even to work on Mafreya.
It comes into the category of
Right, not the conceptual category, but the species. Namely, that we need simanim, that this is the proper species, that many, many fruits look similar when they're small, but as they grow, they tend to look different. So at what point can we be certain that this is a species of esrog? When the color is going to be the yellow-green, and when the size is going to be a certain minimal size. Only the esrog would have that, would have that combination. And that would be a raya that we have the proper species. That, you know, it's so within the Rav, the sugya of Laman Aleph Amud Beis is talking about criteria of species, and our sugya is talking about ripening. That these are two different worlds. Yes.
How would a person possibly distinguish whether their esrog was bosar or not without eating it, if all the external factors are a different sugya?
I think that's what Rashi, as Chaim pointed out, not just the Tosas' imaginary Rashi, but the real Rashi, wanted to, you know, bring in the pool halavan, that there has to be some sort of an external indication that we're dealing with a sour esrog as opposed to a mature esrog.
That sounds not like the Rosh.
But that's 100% correct. I know it's the. In other words, the understanding would be that Tosa certainly did not learn like Rashi. The Rav certainly did not learn like that Rashi, because the first one gets to the level of species, and it's still going to be considered to be bosar for a certain period of time, even after it's a goz or beitza. It could still be bosar. How would you know? Maybe, you know, simply by assuming that the esrogim on a tree of the same size are probably the same level of maturity, which is problematic because of the concept of esrog dar be'ilon yoter mishana. So the fact that it's on the same tree doesn't mean necessarily it's even the same crop. It could be this esrog is from this year's crop, this esrog is from last year's crop. It's a good question. I have no idea. I don't know. Okay, but the proof of the pudding that we're dealing with two different worlds is the placement within the Rambam. That the Rambam has two prakim where he deals with arba minim, zayin and chet. How did we already define the difference between the two prakim? What does he deal with in perek zayin, and what does he deal with in perek chet? Zion is the identity, the basic identity of the Arba Minim. That's where you're going to find, you know, the Hadas Meshulash as opposed to the Hadas Shota. And Ches deals with what? Psulim, what we call the Mumim. The problematic aspects, the Chaser, the Hadar. That's all in Perek Ches. Where do we find the sugi on Daf Lamed Aleph from the days? In which perek? Zion. And where do we find the sugi of Esrog Bosar? In Perek Ches. The Rambam paskins like the Chachamim, that Esrog Bosar is kosher. But he puts that in Perek Ches. Masha'en Kain, in terms of the size, that he puts in Perek Zion. However, the Rambam takes a detour from the sugi. We saw that the sugi dealt with the size of the Esrog with one of two criteria, either the criteria of Hadar as a Havamina, or Gemar Pera as a Maskana. But that sugya is Aliba Dehum, Rav Yehuda. We don't pass like Rav Yehuda. We pass like the Chachamim. So what would be the most smooth way of learning the sugya? Why do you require a certain minimum size, according to the Chachamim? You don't have to come on to Gemar Pera, according to the Chachamim. Even Hadar would be enough, right? My love, Hadar. That you need a certain size for it to be hadar, but if we pass like the chachamim and it's din of hadar, where, in which perek should it be? That should be in perek ches. The Rambam puts it in perek zayin, but also he puts it in a totally different context. Let's just look at the Rambam over there in perek zayin ochaches. Kama shir orech kol min mehem lulav, he gives the shir of lulav. Hadas and arava, he gives the shir of hadas and arava. Then he moves over to the world of shir esrog, In terms of the maximum size, there's no maximum size, kosher. What does appear from the Rambam? That it's not a din of Gemar Peira, it's not a din of Hadar, but what is it a din of? I mean, from the context?
Shiurim.
That all chefs of some mitzvah have shiurim. These shiurim are halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. These shiurim are given. We have in other words that we have a shiur for how much you have to eat for a bracha achrona. We have shiurim how much matzah you have to eat to be yotzei the mitzvah. Any chefza of mitzvah in the world of halacha has shiurim midaraisa, and those shiurim generally are considered. Gemara says are halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, and that's the context. Why did the Rambam do that? In other words, what pushed the Rambam? The sugya doesn't mention anything. In other words, when we deal with lulav and hadas and arava, the sugya simply takes for granted those are the shiurim. We come to esrog, the Gemara says, "My lav hadar." No, it's a din of gemar peira. And if we take Rabbi Yehuda out of the equation, so we have back to the option of hadar or gemar peira. And yet the Rambam doesn't mention anything. Doesn't view esrog as a separate category, but he puts it in the general world of shiurim. What pushed the Rambam to put it? Again, there's nothing in the Gemara against it, but what did the Gemara push the Rambam to learn Dafka in this manner? What does one gain by learning that it's a din in shiurim? What halachos did we base? In other words, we had Mishnayos dealing with all arba minim, and we had different cases of psul, and one of the psulim was based on a presumption that there's a din of a shiur in the arba minim. Which halacha, which psul, which is found universally both by lulav and hadas and arava, and by esrog. Why is lulav shel asheira pasul? Ksusei mechtas shiure. Namely, if you have a shiur, and we have an arava, and we have an asherah, which means that this is considered to be burnt, then the shiur no longer exists. Ksusei mechtas shiure. So since the Mishnah also mentions by esrog shel asherah that it's pasul, ksusei mechtas shiure, so the Rambam felt that even though this is the Gemara didn't say it black and white, Kamir Ed, that esrog also has this classic requirement of shiur, just as we find by the other minim, and therefore he puts it in that category. It could be, again, that the Rambam is not so certain, in other words, that the shiur could also be, the fact that the egos and the kibbutz of that level of shiur could be because of hadar, or could be because of gemar peira, but the concept itself, that there is a shiur, that's working off of ksuse mechtas shiure. Okay.
What does he gain by doing that?
He sets the background for the psul of esrog shel asherah. That once there's a shiur, then an esrog shel asherah lacks the shiur, even though it appears to have the shiur on the surface, but it lacks it halachically. Okay, so that's what we have over here then in terms of this first section of the Gemara. Tov. Okay, let's move over to the next section of the Gemara, moving over to the Lamed Vav Amid Beis. The Gemara over there deals with, in terms of the Tefus, we already pointed out, that Yitachain, that it's a psul, or the Esro can lose its identity. And moving over to the world of Chaser, Itmar Esrog Shenikvuhu Achbarim Amarav Ein Ze Hadar. Ay, Vahar Rabbi Chanina Matpil Bey V'nafik bay, Rabbi Chanina kasha masnisin bishlam masnisin Rabbi Chanina lo kasha, that we have a requirement of hadar kan biyom tov rishon kan biyom tov sheni ela l'rav kasha amalach rav shani mitnachbarim de meisei ikadam yam rav ze hadar the Rabbi Chanina might believe v'nafik bay. Or it's a sugi, can go in both directions, but basically we have over here two different psulim. We have a psul of chaser and a psul of maus. What's the difference between the psul of chaser and the psul of maus? When a person eats it, that's chaser. When achbarim are menakevit, that is ma'us. Right, that is ma'us. My nafkamina on what plane we're talking about? Right, Yom Rishon or Shar Yomim. The psul of Chaser is only Yom Rishon, so that Rabbi Chanina got around by chewing on his esrog after Yom Rishon. There's no longer a psul of Chaser, but the psul of Ma'us, that's all 7 days, and that's what was pointed out by Rav in terms of esrog shenikvuhu ach barim.
Rav's turn of phrase is a little funny. He says, in Zahadar.
Nachon. Ein zahadar, but then the Gemara, you know, in terms of explaining, Rav says, shani achbari demi'ise. What I meant to say, well, ein zahadar, this is not the classic hadar, but rather this is the hadar, you know, words of ma'us, which would apply all 8 days. And it's that, with, again, as we saw, hadar lends itself to different levels. Like Rashi had a hadar of zekei levan ve'hu, lachatkila hadar, and a hadar which is ma'akev, and so here we have a hadar which takes it one step further in terms of being ma'us. And I sent you to Tosos on Daf Mem Vav Amid Beis because the sugya over there raises another issue. Leaving aside the issue of chaser and ma'us, what other issue does the Gemara over there deal with? Machlokes Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish?
When you can eat your esrog.
Yes, in other words, there's an issue of muktzah. That the esrog is hukta le mitzvah, so, or it's even hukta for the period of time of all of Sukkot. During that period of time, when it's mukta, it can't be eaten. So, what? How do we understand the Rabbi Chanina in the light of the sugya on Daf Memvav Amud Beis? How could he eat his esrog? Apparently, before he did the mitzvah, that he was yotze with the mitzvah, he was yotze with the esrog that he ate. But how did he eat it if he hasn't yet been yotze the mitzvah? We have a problem both according to Rav Yochanan that it's muktzah all 7 days, and even according to Rish Lakish that it's muktzah the mitzvah, so at least until after you yotze. And it appears Rabbi Chanina is going against both Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish. That's Tosis' question, and Tosis comes up with a tremendous chiddush in terms of the world of muktzah, that what can a person do?
Whatever he's a chiyuv to eat is muktzah, but whatever's extra, since he's able to.
That he's able to take an organic whole and claim that I'm only going to be muktzah the part of this whole which is necessary for the mitzvah, assuming that that's the rov of the esrog. I'm only going to be muktzah the rov of the esrog for the mitzvah, and the rest of it is not muktzah. That's Tosis's chiddush in order to be able to understand what is going on. And then Tosis at the very end simply dealt with the side issue of how did Rabbi Chanina eat in the morning before he was yotzei the mitzvah. We know that you shouldn't eat before doing mitzvos. In other words, not al shulchano. And Tosis says that he ate the previous day after doing the mitzvah of day 3. He ate in the afternoon of day 3, and then he was carrying the mitzvah on day 4. But Tosis' basic chiddush is that one can be makzeh part of an object. The Ritva felt that was dochuk. I'm sorry, I just forgot to put the Ritva on the source sheet. The Ritva felt that was dochuk, and so how did the Ritva understand Rabbi Chanina? How was he able to set up Rabbi Chanina? Nachon. In other words, that is, again, it's hard for us to understand this in light of the taste of esrogim nowadays. The only people who eat esrogim are women who are pregnant in order that they should have a healthy child, or people who are into skulos, they'll eat some esrog jelly so the following year they'll have a beautiful esrog. But leaving aside the world of skulos, most people don't eat esrogim. But in the time of Chazal, the esrog was a pre-eitz hadar that also was very tasty, and so he ate from an esrog that he had set aside originally for achila, not for the mitzvah, and then afterwards decided to use it. So it was only going to be muktzah once he already ate it, not before he ate it. When he ate it, it was still not muktzah. It only became muktzah later, and then you don't have to be mechadesh any new halachos. You have to set up a new kimta, but you don't have to set up any new halachas. Yes.
What did
Rebbe use before that? The esrog that he set aside. In other words, he had an esrog that he had set aside for using an esrog. Maybe like in all the classic stories, it fell and the pitum broke, and then he had to go back to the esrog that he had already bitten from. Okay, maybe it was a small esrog, and when he weighed it, now weighed less than a kebetza, it lost weight, and so he had to use another esrog that was whatever we can come on to. So then the Gemara moves over to Lechora, moving back to the Aflamed Vavam Adays. To Lechora, as I understand it, a totally coincidental machlokes to the world of Esrog Katan. We saw already the machlokes as to whether the minimum size is egos or beitza. Amar Raphaim Bar Papa, ke machlokes kan, kach machlokes ba'avonim mikur zalos. Tanya b'shabas, gimel az avonim mikur zalos, muter lahachnes lebeis kisei. Ve'kama shiuran, Rav Meir omer ke egos, Rav Yehuda omer ke beitza. Did anyone find a conceptual connection between the kebetza and the egos in these two sugyos, or just coincidence? Okay, I couldn't go beyond coincidence. I'm sorry, the seder. But yitzchein that there is another level of understanding the sugya. But I didn't find it. So please, if you find it, please let me know. But in any case, just to understand this, with the sugi which is being brought in, so we have a technical question on the word mikur zalos, which is not a very common word, that Rashi understood it in what aspect of the rock? The shape. And Tosus understood it in terms of what aspect of the rock?
The size.
Hmm?
Not the smoothness, right?
Not the smoothness.
The softness, the
texture. Whereas Tosus felt that the texture of a rock would be much more important in terms of using it for Kavod HaBrios than the shape of the rock, and Rashi kind of felt that the shape of the rock was also very, very relevant. But the bottom line of the Gemara is that we have a heter of Kavod HaBrios. What can one do in a situation of Kavod HaBrios? Violate an Isur Drabanan. However, Rashi over here is very, very, very clear that not every Isur Drabanan one can violate for Kavod HaBrios. Rashi sets up an ukimta, muter lahachnis lebeis hakisei, betoch dalid amos, u beit hakisei basode, ve'eino mukaf machitzos. Namely, that what is Rashi taking out of the picture? What Isur Drabanan? That, in other words, Chotzah Doraisa is either carrying four Amos in Rishus HaRabim or carrying from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYachad or vice versa. That's Chotzah Midoraisa. What over here would be the Chotzah Midrabanan that Rashi is coming to exclude?
The Carmelis.
Right? We're in a Sada. So there's no Rishus HaRabim. It's a Carmelis. So we're dealing with the Nukimta where you didn't carry Arab Amos in a Carmelis, and you didn't take it from the Carmelis into Rishus HaYachad. That's the Ukimta. There are no machitzos. And therefore, the only issue is one of tilt or mukta. And tilt and Kavod HaBrios is mafkia, the world of tilt or mukta. What appears to be the criteria of Rashi? Why distinguish between mukta, which is drabanan, and the world of Carmelis slash Hotza'a from the picture?
It's not zero based on a...
Right. In other words, that it appears that we are allowing an Isur Drabanan that Rabbanan created, Yesh Me'ayin, that we will pass over in light of Kavod HaBrios, but a Drabanan which is built on a Melacha D'Oraisa, that far we don't go even in the world of Kavod HaBrios. That's what appears to be the criteria of Rashi, but that's making an assumption about Muktzah. Right? And that assumption about Muktzah, we have to check out really those who define Muktzah and who is the who are the classic Rishonim who defined the basis of the of Muktzah?
The
Rambam and the Ravid. Okay, so I'm well aware that the classic way of learning the Rambam is that how many types of Muktzah does the Rambam describe, or how many sources of Muktzah?
Three,
and then the Ravid adds a fourth. My humble opinion, the Rambam has four, and the Ravid adds a fifth. Okay, so if we could read through I certainly agree that that according to my reading of the Rambam, the syntax is wacky, but the Rambam appears to have four different ideas. Asru chachamim letaltel mixas dvarim b'shabbos. Reading the Rambam, Perek Yud Beis, Kaf Dalet Halcha Yud Beis. Kederach shuose b'chol umipneiman nagu beisur ze. Amru, number one, ma'im hisiru neviim v'tzibu shelo yehilu chacha b'shabbos ki chacha b'chol v'lo sichas shabbos k'sichas achol. What over here is the makor in Sefer Yeshayahu? It was a haftorah that we just read recently, right, on Tainus Tzibur. Okay, you will check it out. But those are the two isurim that we find in terms of mimtzo chafatzecha, right? V'daber davar. So if we have dinim in terms of hiluch and sicha, sheneemar v'daber davar, kal v'chomer shelo yetiltul b'shabbos ketiltul b'chol. Okay, kedei shelo yiyeh ki yom chol be'enav. That is number one. In other words, to distinguish between Shabbos activities and chol activities. Then, in my humble opinion, number two, v'yavo lahagbia ulatakein kelim mipina lepina o mibayis lebayis o lahatznia avonim kayotze bohem. Namely, that a person, were there not to be a din of muktzah, would spend his Shabbos rearranging furniture and refurnishing his house. Sheri hu batel v'yoshev bebeiso v'yevakesh davar shiyisasek bo v'nimtza shelo shavas u'bitel hatam sheneemar l'ma'an yanuach. Now, the chor, this is a separate reason, namely that we have over here a concept of yanuach. That has nothing to do, l'chor, with the concept of dabir davar and lo yehi l'chacha b'shabbos ki l'chacha b'chol. Those are to give Shabbos a certain uniqueness. Here we're dealing with a separate understanding of lema'an yanuach. So I would view these as two reasons. Va'od, a third reason, kishi yevakir v'yataltel kelim shemlachton le'iser efshar shiyisaksek b'ma'at v'yavol lidei malacha. That's already a third reason. And then the fourth reason is miksa sa'am enam ba'alei umnios elabetelin kol yameim. We have people who don't do malacha all week long. So if the only uniqueness of Shabbos is not doing malacha, then for them there is no nafkamina between Shabbos and the rest of the week. So if we want to have an area that would be a shvisa from something that people do all week, that's carrying. Everyone carries. And so therefore Chazal made limitations on carrying so that there would be a Shabbos even for people who don't do malacha. That there would be some area that would be universal among all Jews, that this would be their Shabbos. Comes on the Ravid and points out he has no idea why the Rambam is going to such efforts to figure out the source of Muktzah. It was the Gemara. And what's the source of the Gemara? What does the Gemara say is the source? Hotzah. That, you know, words that if you don't pick up certain things, you're not going to carry them. And if you pick them up, there's likely you'll carry them. But the Gemara went through different stages. You know, it's one stage was they asked carrying anything, and then, you know, that created a tremendous agnas nefesh on Shabbos. Then they only asked one particular category, and then there was no, it really didn't affect people. And then they came up with these rules of X and Y and Z can be carried, and A and B and C cannot be carried, and that reminded people of the din of Hotzah. Okay, so within Rashi's distinction between the world of Carmelis and the world of Muktzah, which of these explanations would fit into Rashi's distinction and which would not?
Not the Rambam.
Right. Well, so 1, 2, and 4 with, in other words, with view muksa as something coming yesh be'ayin, Ma'ashen came 3 and 5, view muksa as a classic gezeira shema. Shema yaseh malacha in the object that he's lifting, shema yotzi, the object he's metaltel, those, you know, then muksa would not be a separate category.
Yeah, but 1 and 2 are based on psukim. A little more chomer?
1 and 2 are based on gezeros that Chazal established at a later point due to psukim. Namely, the pasuk only deals really with Hiluch. You know what you're saying, that if we say Iboyisei Makrei, Iboyisei Masvara, and the first one is built on a Kalvachomer, and a Kalvachomer, Lachora, is a Svara, so it's as though it's in Divrei Kabbalah.
Right.
But Divrei Kabbalah would also be not necessarily a Doraisa. In other words, we're not dealing with a Malacha. We're not dealing with the world of Malacha. But again, this is a you know, that Chazal gave us a framework that would buttress the Man Yanuach. But again, it's not, you know, it's it maybe this distinction between Haseh, Mitzvah, Los Haseh. There's still a distinction between that and Malacha. I agree with you. It's not as neat as the, you know, as the other explanations that are really Yesh Me'ayin. Okay. However, Tosfos goes in a different direction than Rashi. What does Tosfos say about Rashi's distinction between Karmelis and Muktzah?
Yeah, like it.
It's wrong.
It does not match with the Gemara. The Gemara sounds not like Rashi.
The Gemara sounds not like Rashi, but also Rashi has to go and set up an ukimta, and Tosfos feels that there's a kalvachomer against this ukimta. There's a kalvachomer that if kavod abrios is matir muktza, kalvachomer that kavod abrios is matir carrying in a karmelis. What kind of kalvachomer? So Tosfos says our sugya is dealing with kavod abrios. There's a parallel sugya deals with kavod hames. Kavod hames sometimes involves removing the mace from the area where it currently is. And we find that if the issue is one of muktza, if we're talking about the world of muktza, how does one solve the problem of muktza in order to move the mace?
Put something on it.
There's to put right, kikar or a tinok to put on the mace and then to carry, you know, where it's in that manner. However, if there is no Rishus HaRabim and all there is a Karmelis, what can one do in terms of Tiltol Hames for Kavod Hames?
Move without
any conditions at all. So we see that Karmelis, or that Muktzah is more Chamor than Karmelis. And so if we are Matir Muktzah for Kavod HaBrios, Kalvachomer, that we're Matir Karmelis. That's Tosus's Kalvachomer. In Achinami there may be different types of drabanans, but rather than view Karmelis as being more chamor than Muktza, we see from the world of Kavod Hames that Muktza is more chamor than Karmelis. Okay, that is Tosis's working assumption, and therefore there's no need to set up any ukimtot over here. Just as Kavod HaBrios overrides Muktza, Kavod HaBrios overrides the entire world of Karmelis. Okay, the question or two ha'aros that we have within Tosfos, or we could have within Tosfos, is one: why really should Muktza be more chamor than Karmelis in terms of Kavod Hames? I mean, we understand Rashi. Rashi distinguished between categories of drabanans, and we have a category of drabanans which is closer to a doraisa, and a core category of drabanan which is less close to a Doraisa. That we understand. But Tosfos quotes, by in the world of Kavod Hames, the opposite, that the Karmelis, which according to Rashi was more Chamur, that is more Kal, that we can simply dismiss without any conditions. And the Muktza, that according to Rashi was more Kal, all of a sudden that's more Chamur, that you require Dafka, Tinok, or Kikar in order to override the issue of Muktza. Why? It appears to be counter intuitive, A. B, once Tosfos says that we are allow for Kavod HaBrios to be over not only Muktza but also Karmelis, is Tosfos saying that any Iser Drabanan allows itself to be overridden in the world of Kavod HaBrios? Does Tosfos have any limitations at all in terms of his approach, or once we're matir, muktzan karmelis, then the sky is the limit. We're simply matir isurim d'rabbanan. Neither of these questions does Tosfos relate to. But who does relate to these two questions? The Ramban. The Ramban in his Torah Sa'adam gives us principles and rules to explain both of these issues that we have within Tosfos. So let's just look at those particular sections, with your permission, within the Ramban. The Ramban, in the middle of the first paragraph that, as I put it on the other side of the page I gave out today, but you also have a Yamar Makomos page, in the middle of the first paragraph, he points out Pirish. Ha deshara Rav Nachman Isur Karmelis Shari Lahu, that when it came to Karmelis in the world of Kavod HaMeis, we simply overrode the entire concept. Aval Isur Til Tolo Shari Lahu Ela Ede Kikar Otinok, but in Mukta we required a condition. Why that appears to be counterintuitive. The taima de milsa shelo tiru etzol kavod habrios ela isur she'ein lo takana kagon hotzas karmelis avol tiltul she'efshar letaken kagon ayidei kikar otinok lohi tiruhu ela al yedehem. Well, what over here is this distinction that the Ramban is offering?
I mean, if we can do it in a way that's not violating this Ramban, so then we are not allowed to do this Ramban. If we have to violate this Ramban, it doesn't matter how badly we violate it, or how many we violate together at the same time.
I think you're 100% correct. I would just formulate it perhaps slightly differently, even though I agree what you're saying is, you know, fits very nicely into the Ramban. But I think what the Ramban may be saying is that if we already have a pre-existing heter within a certain Iser Drabanan, and we can simply expand that pre-existing heter, and we, in the world of Muktzah, we have a concept of Davar HaMutar V'Davar HaAsur. If you have a drawer that has in it both a sitter and a wallet, you're allowed to open the drawer. Right? If you have a talus bag that has within it a talus and tefillin, you're allowed to carry the talus bag on Shabbos. We already have a din of davar hamuter v'asur. So over here we have a mace. So we're taking the world of davar hamuter v'asur and expanding it. We'll take a davar hamuter, put it on. Again, this is not the norm. Normally, you just can't take a sitter and put it into the drawer, and then, you know, and then be able to move the drawer. It had to have been there from Erev Shabbos. But once we already have a concept of davar hamuter va'asur as being a heter within the world of muktzah, so we'll take that heter and expand it rather than simply negate the entire principle. But if we have no heter to talk about, like in the world of Karmelis, then we have the right to simply dismiss the entire Iser Drabana, namely that we would rather take a pre-existing heter and expand it. That would be our preference, rather than dismiss. But if we have no alternative, then we could totally dismiss the Iser Drabana, and that's the distinction which I think he's making over here. And therefore, he points out that once we already have the heter of Karmelis, what can you do away with? In the next paragraph, Linira.
The Kikar,
right. In other words, that there's no reason to add, then all you're doing is being Mosif Tiltul. You know, then you're just making the situation worse rather than making it better. So once we have the two alternatives, so simply you can use one of the two, you don't have to use necessarily both. In the last paragraph, he returns to this concept, the last paragraph on the page of Ikasha. That Kavod HaBrios is limited to the world of Kavod HaMeis, of Kikar and Tinok, and why should that be if we can already simply use the total Karmelis? Yeshlamar, the Tanakama also mishum de efsher lemitan ale kikar otinok. ואין לך מקום דחוק שלא יהיה המצו יכול ליתן עליו כיכר או תינק או אחד מן הכלם שהוא לבש כיוצא במשום הכי עשר. ורב יהודה סבר ימצו שחדו רבוסת כנבת. In other words, that's a different issue, but again, that once we have this heter of davar hamuter v'ha'asar, it's better to use that to be and simply expand the heter rather than totally dismiss the entire Isur Drabanan. Okay, that's A. In terms of our question, are there limits b'chol zot to the world of which Isurim we can dismiss because of Kavod HaMeis or Kavod HaBrios? So here he quotes Rabbeinu Chananel in the next to the last paragraph. What distinction does Rabbeinu Chananel make? But it's not like Rashi, because here the Ramban and Rabbeinu Chananel are working like Tosfos, that we're being Matir Karmelis. We're being Matir Karmelis, and we're being Matir Mukta, and there's a way of putting Karmelis and Mukta in the same box. So let's read it together. Midiv Rabbeinu Chananel zal nira shehu oser v'atam shalo hitir kavod abrios hazeh ela davar sheikaro bidivrei sofrim kagon Karmelis Harishus Harabim Lo, Vafalpi Shitiru Kilaim Drabanan Vatuma Drabanan Vakomishim Kavad Abrios Kan Asruha, the Mi Mapis Bemalacha Shalo, Imutsarach Lagufa Im Lav, Vafilu Botsa Sameis Mishkachas Lagufa Kosa Shamrubi Rushami Begoy Shotzio Lakalbo, Kol Shaken Shakevan Shatiltul Tsarach Lakikar or Latinok, Koshishin Lo Shema Bekikar Hotziu, Dislehuve Doraisa, Hero Osamotsu Sarabim Omer Hutra Shfust is Behuve Doraisa, Kol Shekem Bishar Malachos, Kevan Shikari Torah Asur. Teda Shehe Amru Gabi Tiltul Ego Sharisle Osilich Buye. Vim Tomar Komachashal Devraim Natir Kabad Hames, Afilu Kibu Yatsmo Natir, Kedivi Rabbi Shimokhashen Sukha Gufahu, etc. In other words, that's there Rabbi Nochananel makes his distinction. What is the distinction that he's making? How are we going to define something? In other words, Rabbi Nochananel distinguished between davar she'ikaro midivrei sofrim. Under ikaro midivrei sofrim, he includes not only mukta like Rashi, he also includes karmelis. What does he exclude? Malacha shein tzricha lagufa. He excludes Amira La'akum. In other words, what's the difference between, in other words, Hotzas Hameis, by definition, is a Malacha She'en Tzricha Lagufa. Hotza'a is defined when you want an object in place, the object's currently in place B, you want it in place, the object's currently in place A, you want it in place B. That's a Malacha She'en Tzricha Lagufa. If the object is currently in place A, you don't want it in place A, and that's why you're moving it, that's not a malacha, that's a malacha she'ein tzricha lagufa. Kibui, right, we're talking about sreifa, kibui sreifa, by its definition, is a malacha she'ein tzricha lagufa. In other words, the malacha she'ein tzricha lagufa would be if you want to make coal. Then kibui would be malacha she'ein tzricha lagufa. To put out the fire, that's a malacha she'ein tzricha lagufa. So the Rebbe Chananel points out, we're not matir malacha she'ein tzricha lagufa. We're not matir simply to take the mace out into a shusarabim, even though it's drabonon. But that's a drabanan sheyeshlo ikar min haTorah. We're not matir simply to put out the fire, even though putting out the fire is drabanan. It's malacha she'en tzricha lagufa. That's davar sheyeshlo ikar midoraisa. We're matir karmelis. We're matir mukta. In other words, take the concept of ikar midivrei sofrim and think of it not in terms of what motivated Chazal to aser it, but rather, are there any circumstances in which we would touch on an Isur d'oraisa in this in other words, in this realm. The realm of Carmelis, you're never going to have an Isur Daraisa. By definition, you're never going to have an Isur Daraisa. The Carmelis is not a Rishus HaRabim. And so there's never going to be an Isur Daraisa, no matter how far you carry in the Carmelis, no matter where you take it from the Carmelis, there's never going to be an Isur Daraisa in this realm. Masha'en kein melacha she'en tzricha legufa means that the same act under other circumstances would be a daraisa. If you're not carrying the mace, but you're simply carrying a kikar from a Rishus HaYachid to a Rishus HaRabim, that's a melacha daraisa. Only the mace is the melacha drabana. Namely, the question over here is, can I come to an Isur daraisa with this act? And in the world of Malacha Shein Tzricha Lagufa, sure you can. In Amira La'akum, sure you can. But in the world of Carmelis, you can never, just as you can never within the world of Muktzah.
It's kind of forced definition, though. Like, we're trying to fit the peg into the hole. But, like, because, you know, you can carry in Rishus HaRabim, and then that, you really are, you know, over into Raisa.
But we're not talking about Rishus HaRabim.
We're not talking about a kikar, we're talking about a mace. It's a little forced. It's not the most glad understanding.
I think that's what Rechanochel means.
I agree.
He repeats it again in the bottom paragraph, five lines from the bottom, in the middle of the line. Ava malacha she'en lo ikar mitorah hitiru ade Yisrael kagon karmelis v'kavad abrios v'lo hitiru malacha she'esh lo ikar batorah filu ba'amira kagon ba'amamin. In other words, you can create a hechatimtza where there will be an iser and a hechatimtza where there won't be an iser. So, in other words, it appears that the issue over here of ikert batorah or lo ikert batorah is as to whether this particular act lends itself to ever reaching a stage of a da'oraisa. If it lends itself to reaching a stage of a da'oraisa, then we're not going to be matir it mitzad kavod hames or kavod abrios. If this act can never reach a level of da'oraisa, even though it is similar to another act, which is da'oraisa, then we can be matir. Okay, so in other words, this would put, this Rabbeinu Chananel, at least would put a cap on Tosfos. So we'll stop over here. So it's more of a natural place to stop than I guess the Marmakomas I gave, and so next time we'll move into the sugya of Eged. So in other words, begin to learn the sugya. We never will give you Marmakomas. 12:15. The topic is Neo Chasidus. I don't know. That's the topic. Exactly what the issue is. Find out.